Now, this is the third lesson in the prophecy of Hosea. This lesson covers chapters 8, 9, and 10. The title given for this lesson is The Pronouncement of Judgment on the Rebellious People. I suggest that you either have your Bible open as you listen to this lesson, or else you take time to read, first of all, the three chapters. Just as Hosea had to deal with his unfaithful wife, Gomer, that was found in chapter 2, so now he proclaims to the nation that the Lord will deal in righteousness with the nation because of their unfaithfulness to the covenant made with God. Now always keep in mind that the first three chapters of this prophecy were personal, dealing with the life of this man Hosea and his domestic circumstances with Gomer, his wife. He had to learn these things in a personal way, and then in his ministry to the nation, he applied the same principles to them. And just as he had to discipline his own wife in order to effect a restoration, that is, to bring conviction to her heart and then to have her restored, so now in this particular lesson, chapters 8 through 10, he's pronouncing judgment on the rebellious people. Now, in chapter 8, the great lesson to be learned here is the danger of neglecting God and violating the divine standards of righteousness by moving into the way of self-will. That being so, the chapter opens with what we call the warning trumpets. Set the trumpet to thy mouth. As an eagle against the house of the Lord, because they have transgressed my covenant and trespassed against my law. Now, the idea of blowing a trumpet was to give a warning. Can you picture a watchman sitting in his watchtower, perhaps on the wall of a walled city, and he's watching outward? And at the first approach of an enemy, he's got to blow that trumpet and give the warning. If a watchman failed to blow the trumpet, if he failed to give the warning when the enemy was approaching, then the blood of the people rested upon the watchman. That is, he was held responsible if anything happened. But if the watchman took his trumpet and blew the warning blast, and the people refused to listen, if they failed to take the warning, and danger came, and they were defeated, then remember, the responsibility rested with them. So here at the opening of this chapter then, Hosea is blowing the trumpet. He's giving the warning sound. Now that would not in the least make him popular. In fact, you'll find that the prophets of God in the Old Testament were never popular men. They were men who were raised up at a particular time to warn the people and to deliver the message of God. And they were not popular. They were persecuted, put to death. Now he says, set the trumpet to thy mouth. As an eagle against the house of the Lord, and here's why, because they have transgressed my covenant and trespassed against my law. Now, remember this, that the way of transgressors is very hard. Their transgression and trespass was an insult to God. Now, take note of some of the ways in which they transgressed the law of God. If you care, look now at verse 4. They have set up kings, but not by me. They have made princes, and I knew it not, Of their silver and their gold have they made them idols, that they may be cut off. Now here then is what's levelled against them, and he's blowing the trumpet to give them the warning. First of all, they've been setting up rulers without consulting with God. Now remember, at the first time that they wanted a ruler, Samuel was the man who complained and said, "Oh God, the people have rejected me." God says, "No, it's not you, Samuel, they've rejected. It's me they've rejected." However, God, as it were, seemed to acquiesce, and he said, "Let them have a ruler." And they chose their own ruler, and they chose a man called Saul. Now, Saul reigned over them for 40 years, and he was a complete failure. And then God says, "Now I'll give you a man," and God gave them David. David reigned over them for 40 years. Then following the reign of David, there was the reign of Solomon for another 40 years. But when Solomon died, that was the time when the nation divided. 10 tribes took to the north, leaving the 2 tribes to the south. The northern tribes were sometimes referred to as Israel, sometimes referred to as Ephraim, because Ephraim was the predominant tribe. The southern confederacy was referred to as Judah. Under the standard of Judah, you had the tribe of Judah, the tribe of Benjamin, and the Levites, and a few others who, because of their convictions, left the 10 tribes in the north and came down under the standard of Judah. But now, from the time that that division took place, the northern confederacy had quite a number of kings, rulers, if you like, but not one of them had God's approval. So here he's telling them here that they have set up kings, but not by me. They have made princes, that is, rulers, but they were not according to God's order. So here was something they did. They transgressed the order or principles of God by setting up their own rulers. They never consulted with God about this in one little bit. Then the next thing was, they violated divine principles again by establishing religious centers for idolatrous worship. He says here, "Thy calf, O Samaria, hath cast thee off. Mine anger is kindled against them. How long will it be ere they attain to innocency?" Now God had established the temple in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the place where God had placed his name, and that was the center for the religious gatherings. However, when the nation divided, those who took to the north decided that it would not be wise to allow their people to make the journey down to Jerusalem for the feasts of the Lord. If they did, they might be enticed to go back there and forsake the 10 tribes in the north. So therefore they established their own religious centers, and they were not centers for the worship of God. They were centers for idolatrous worship. At the end of verse 4, he says, "Their silver and their gold have they made them idols, that they may be cut off." Then he says, "Thy calf, O Samaria, hath cast thee off." And so they established their own religious centers for idolatrous worship. Then again, they were seeking security by entering into an alliance with the enemy. Verse 9 says, "For they are gone up to Assyria, a wild ass alone by himself. Ephraim has hired lovers." In plain words, instead of bringing their problems to God, instead of resting upon God for help and protection, they were turning now to their enemies who lived around them. They were going to enter into a covenant with the Assyrians. Now remember this, these Assyrians were their enemies. Already they had entered into a covenant with God. Now, keep in mind what you learned in the first three chapters. Gomer was the wife of Hosea. She had entered into that marriage covenant with him, but she broke the covenant and went after other lovers. As the result, her husband, who was Hosea, had to deal with her in discipline, in righteous discipline. Now, the same thing is seen here with regards to the nation. The nation has proved to be unfaithful. The nation has turned away from God, has turned to the idolatrous worship, has turned to their lovers, so to speak, and by so doing, they're seeking to have security by entering into this alliance with the Assyrian, and that was wrong. It was like breaking their covenant with God. No longer were they trusting in God. In doing this, then, you'll find they were setting up false altars and thus turning away from God. Verse 11, because Ephraim hath made many altars to sin. Altars shall be unto him to sin. Now, if you watch what it is, the whole thing is summed up in verse 14. For Israel hath forgotten his Maker. Setting up false altars and thus turning from God, they forgot their God. Now, if you were to take all this and relate it back to the book of Exodus again, and call to remembrance the standards of the Ten Commandments, you'll see how they transgressed the way of God, and they went in the way of the transgressor, turning away from God. Their transgression and their trespasses were an insult to God. So they were setting up the rulers, establishing the religious centers for idolatry, of course, seeking security by entering into an alliance with the enemy, setting up false altars, and thus turning away from God. But then all that leads to the work of God in retribution. It should be remembered that God will never compromise his standards of righteousness in order to connive with sin or sinners. But he will, in his own time and manner, deal in judgment with sin and with the sinner. Now, what was true in principle with regards God and Israel is just as equally true with regards to God and the individual today. We'll carry that a little further. If you go to the book of Revelation, chapters 2 and 3, you'll find there a series of letters sent to seven churches in Asia. Now, if you travel down through those seven letters in the two chapters, you'll discover this, that God does not wink at the sins even of a church. And he says, repent, or else I will come and remove the lampstand. And there's a call there for the churches who have erred, for them to repent and turn again back to their first love and do their first works. So that God will never compromise. God will never connive with sin or with sinners. So therefore, Hosea here is telling them that God will come down in judgment, for they have sown the wind, and they shall reap the whirlwind. The whole thing is this, it's the principle of sowing and reaping. Whatsoever we sow, we shall reap. So if they turn away and neglect God, you can expect God to deal with them in judgment. Now, that is emphasized now when you come into chapter 9. As you go down through chapter 9, you'll discover this, that Israel, having turned away from the living God, must therefore suffer the consequences of a lost harvest and a lost joy. Now, when Israel went into the land, which was called the Promised Land, and God led them in and gave them possession of that land, there were certain conditions laid down. They were not to mingle with the people of the land. Neither were they to follow the people of the land in their form of worship. In plain words, Israel would remain separate from the people of the land, and they were not to be guilty of committing the same sins as these people had committed. Now get this clear. When God took Israel into that land, he used Israel as the sword of justice against the sinful people who had lived in the land. Their iniquity was full, and it was time for God to punish them. Now God warns Israel that the same principle will be put into operation so far as they were concerned, that if they were guilty of the same sins, then God would have to deal with them and put them out of the land. But as long as they remained in the land and remained faithful to God, they would enjoy all the blessings of the land. Now, one of these blessings, of course, would be the harvest. God would prosper them. But then, when they were in the land, you discover this, that their whole calendar was divided up by certain feasts. So not only were they to enjoy the blessings of the land, but they would have a great joy in attending what was called the Feasts of Jehovah, or the Feasts of the Lord. But now, if they were to turn away from God, then God would turn from them in a sense that he would withhold the blessings. Now, in the first four verses of chapter 9, he's saying, "Rejoice not, O Israel, for joy, for thou hast gone a-whoring from thy God. Thou hast loved the reward upon every corn floor." In plain words, the harvest for which they ought to have given thanks to God, they're now, as it were, giving thanks to their idols. "The floor and the winepress shall not feed them, and the new wine shall fail with her." In plain words, instead of thanking God for his blessings, they're virtually saying it was the idols that they made that was blessing them. Now he says, "They shall not dwell in the Lord's land, for Ephraim shall return to Egypt, and they shall eat unclean things in Assyria. They shall not offer wine offerings to the Lord, neither shall they be pleasing unto him. Their sacrifices shall be unto them as the bread of mourners," and so on. Hear what you discover now. They had despised the blessings of the Lord, and because they despised them, God would withhold them. Then they would be deprived of the joy associated with the feasts. Instead of going to the feasts at the time of harvest, for example, and thanking God, they wouldn't have that joy. There would be nothing to thank God for. They wouldn't have the wine, and they wouldn't have the wheat and so on, and the flour. So they would be deprived of the joy associated with the feasts of the Lord. You find that in verse 5. "What will you do in the solemn day, and in the day of the feast of the Lord?" If there was no harvest, there was nothing to rejoice about. There was nothing to offer back to God. Verses 7 through 9 teach us that they would be disappointed because they refused the warnings of the Lord. "The days of visitation are come. The days of recompense are come. Israel shall know it. The prophet is a fool. The spiritual man is mad." That's what they are saying. You see, they wouldn't listen to the man of God when he gave them God's message. They said, "Oh, he's just a fool. He's mad." You know, they said that about the Apostle Paul one day when he was bearing his testimony before two great rulers. One of them said, "Paul, you're beside yourself. Much learning doth make you mad." Paul said, "I'm not mad. I'm speaking the words of truth and soberness." But then way back in the Old Testament, they said the same thing. They said, "Why, that man of God, he's mad. These things can't happen to us. Why, we're God's people." But what they didn't realize was this, that God's blessings there were conditional. They were disgraced because they were discovered by the Lord. Look at verse 10. "I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first ripe of the fig tree at her first time. But they went to Baal Peor, separated themselves unto that shame, and their abominations were according as they loved. You know, it's a strange thing. Some people like to indulge in sin and in sinful things, but when they're found out, my, they feel so ashamed of themselves. They feel so disgraced. You know, Adam and Eve in the garden, when they took the fruit of the tree, I don't know what their thoughts were at first, but oh, when they heard the voice of God, they ran to hide themselves amongst the trees of the garden. And when God says, "Where are you, Adam?" Adam had to come out and confess. He says, "I was naked, and I went to hide myself." Now, he had never done that before. There was no need. But now he had sinned. He had violated the revealed will of God. And when he heard the voice of God, he felt himself so disgraced, he tried to hide from God, but he was discovered. You know, it's all right for men and women as long as they think nobody knows about it and they go on in their sin. But oh, it is brought to light when they're discovered. Oh, they feel so disgraced. That's exactly what was wrong with Israel here. Israel was disgraced. And so it is. He found them in all their nakedness. And then, according to verse 17, here's what we learn now. At the end of verse 17, chapter 9, "My God will cast them away because they did not hearken unto him. They shall be wanderers among the nations." They're going to be dispersed among the nations because they departed from the Lord. Now, I suppose all of you know this, that for many years Israel was dispersed amongst the nations. It was proverbial to speak about them as a wandering Jew. They had no land, they had no temple, they had no king. They were a nation without a land. They were dispersed amongst all the nations, north, south, east, and west. It's only within our lifetime that some of them have managed to get back to the land of their fathers and to become re-established in what was called the land of promise. But you see the verse here at the end of chapter 9. Here's the verse that Hosea tells them. He's speaking as the Lord's servant. He says, "My God will cast them away because they did not hearken unto him. They shall be wanderers among the nations." It's a tragedy when any nation refuses to listen to the word of the Lord. It's a tragedy when any individual refuses to listen to the word of the Lord. You see, when they neglect God and turn away from God, then God turns away from them, and he's under no obligation whatever to provide them with the blessings that they have been enjoying. Now, when you move from there into chapter 10, here's the lesson you'll learn in chapter 10. That the failure of Israel is exposed and explained, and the outcome of such failure becomes a warning to all people not to follow the course of pride, which leads to self-will and brings on the judgment of God. Notice the first four verses of chapter 10. Over these you can write "the divided heart." These people abused God's blessings, and instead of producing the fruit of thanksgiving and worship, they erected religious shrines and worshipped their idols. What a tragedy. It says, "Israel is an empty vine. He bringeth forth fruit unto himself according to the multitude of his fruit. He hath increased the altars according to the goodness of his land. They have made goodly images. Their heart is divided." Here then is the divided heart. In plain words, they profess one thing, but they practice another. If you had asked them about their God, they would have said, "Oh yes, Jehovah is our God. Yeah? The Lord our God is one." They could quote that. They would still claim that the living God was their God. But in practice it was different. Watch them. They're erecting their own religious shrines, professing one thing, practicing another. You know we have a word for that at the present time. It's called hypocrisy, to have a divided heart, professing one thing and practicing another. But then verses 5 through 6 are distorted values. Israel exchanged the glory of God for their golden calves of idolatry. They placed a greater value on their dumb idols because they could see them, a greater value there than they placed upon the living God whom they couldn't see. Have you ever wondered how it is that intelligent people can so debase themselves as to make graven images, carved images, and so on, and bow down to little pieces of wood and little pieces of stone, or made perhaps with gold or silver, whatever it may be, and they bow themselves down to their little idols? But they will not trust the mighty God of creation. They will not turn to the God of our salvation. Oh, they don't want a God they cannot see. They would rather bow down to a little graven image. Then verses 7 through 14. You find this nation now under discipline. You should consider the principle of sowing and reaping once again. Whatever or whoever a man trusts, he will also serve. That's another principle brought out in these closing verses. The course we pursue in life will determine the end we reach. Very strange but interesting. As for Samaria, her king is cut off as the foam upon the water. The high places also of Avon, the sin of Israel, shall be destroyed. The thorn and the thistle shall come up on their altars. They shall say to the mountains, cover us, and to the hills, fall on us. O Israel, thou hast sinned. You see, God is now dealing with them in discipline. Just as Hosea had to deal with his wife in discipline, so God is to deal with this nation in discipline. It's one of God's principles that he will discipline his own. So whatever we sow, we reap. That's a principle laid down in the New Testament. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. If we sow to the Spirit, you reap life everlasting. If you sow to the flesh, then you reap the results thereof, death. Whatever or whoever a man trusts, he will also serve. Now, if they trusted God, they would serve God. Paul, in writing his epistle to the Thessalonians, says to him, you turn to God from idols to serve the living and the true God and to wait for his Son from heaven. These people had been idolaters and they turned to God, and the moment they turned to God and trusted him, they began to serve God. But back here in the book of Hosea, it's the very opposite. Here were people who knew God, they turned away from God, and they turned to their idols, and they started to serve their idols. They were not serving God now, they were serving their idols. Now we should remember this, that whatever course we pursue in life, that will determine the destiny or the end we shall reach. So as you read down through those closing verses of chapter 10, you'll see exactly the course that Israel is pursuing and the end to which she will come. Now that will bring us to the end now of lesson number 3. In our next lesson, we shall conclude this little prophecy and finish with the closing chapter.